Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
When Christian and I were kids, we had a few different babysitters. Our favorite, or my favorite babysitters, were there were three teenage boys who lived, this sounds weird now, who lived around the corner from us named the Parises. And they were very impressive. The key is they played football. They were high school football players. And at the time, when I was 5, 6, 7 years old, I was obsessed with football. Either one or two of them at a time would occasionally babysit for us. And one time when they did, I wanted so badly to impress them that I set up a shrine in my bedroom of the football helmet I had and all my favorite football cards. And filtered through my 6 or 7 year old brain, I thought they thought it was cool. But looking back, they must have been kind of freaked out.
Oh, that's why you got the restraining order against you. I always wondered what that was for.
Oh, you thought it was just random?
Yeah.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
From Wondery, this is Justin Long, and you are listening to Life is Short.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
And with me, as always, is Christian.
Hi, Justin.
Hi, Christian. And that continues to be weird.
I know.
we normally don't call each other by our first names, but you are named Christian.
So speaking of the Parises, they were kind of the idealized version of our,
yes,
our family, in that we were three brothers. They were three brothers. They were older than us, mm-hmm, but they were not that, not to put us down too much, but they were very handsome and friendly and athletic. They played sports. So they were kind of, I always saw them as people that we aspired to be, you know, as a kid.
Yeah, that's true. They were definitely our physical superiors.
Well, we were also little boys. They were, they had...
But even once we became teenagers, they, looking back, I think they were physically superior.
But you don't know that because you're like...
They were...
Your vision of them
varsity
is
football players.
Not all varsity football players are really good looking.
No, not necessarily good looking, but more physically impressive than we are. I don't mean just their faces. Is that what you think?
I'm hung up on their faces. They had really nice faces.
I think they did.
Two of them are twins.
Uh-huh.
Remember there was an oldest?
Chris. And occasionally we would get Chris. And that was like, he was like Tom Brady.
I feel like we talk about how handsome Tom Brady is on this podcast a lot.
Way too much. Do gay men like Tom Brady and I fetishize his looks as much as straight men? And I would say probably not. That would be my guess.
We're certainly not qualified to answer that, but I don't think it's possible to answer that.
Besides the Parisi brothers, my favorite babysitter was named Shelley, I think. And she was, I remember her being really pretty. I think she had like kind of a valley, it was the first valley girl accent that I was ever exposed to. And now, of course, that's a very common thing. You see that on a lot of reality shows, that like a lot of them talk like that. You know, that's like a very
common voice. That's how she talked.
She did. She was sort of like,
whatever.
Oh my God. Yeah. We had never heard that before because we grew up on the East Coast. We grew up in Connecticut. So it wasn't a very, you know, that's a very like Orange County, LA area accent, which has now become so popularized that I think a lot of girls talk like that. A lot of guys talk like that too.
Well, speaking of nannies and babysitters, we have on the show today arguably the most famous nanny in the world, I think, or one of them, Fran Drescher, who starred as the nanny on the CBS show The Nanny.
That's true. It's the first time that occurred to me that she is probably the most famous nanny. Who else? What other? I mean, when we were kids,
Mary Poppins.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course.
In fact, Mary Poppins is fictional character. And as you guys are about to find out, Fran Drescher is, in fact, real.
That's right. That's true. Mr. Belvedere, and actually in the 80s, there
Charles in Charge.
Who's the Boss? Tony Danza.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, Charles in Charge, Scott Baio and Tony Danza really reminded me of the Parisi boys. I think just because of the context, and also they were of Italian-American descent, and they had that kind of like swarthy vibe
They did have a swarthy vibe. That's so your taste.
That's my taste in boys.
And boy babysitters. Well, I had never met Fran before. Justin had. He did a movie with her.
We did a movie called Safe Spaces.
She played your mom, which I thought it was sort of insulting to her casting-wise that she...
Thanks.
Well, only because she's so young looking.
Yeah, that's
still.
True.
It's hard to believe that she would be your mother.
I was a little nervous about her casting only because I knew her only as pretty much as the nanny. And I knew her to have such an indelible voice and laugh, but one that was so specifically New York. I mean, specifically Queens, New York.
What were your impressions of her before doing the movie, aside from her voice?
Yeah.
Had you ever seen The Nanny? I had never seen, I don't think I've ever seen The Nanny.
I had seen like scenes from it, but I never sat down and watched start to finish an episode.
I never saw any of it, but I knew that voice and that laugh so well.
Yeah.
Oh, I can say this now because I've since met her and really like her.
Well, what did you think of the voice before?
I thought it was so fucking annoying, which is why, probably why I never saw the show. Who would want to watch 30 minutes of that?
That's interesting. You found her, the voice grating before, and now you find it endearing?
Well, you'll have to wait for the end of the interview to find out what I thought.
Ooh, what a tease.
Spoiler alert, I like it now. No, I thought, so we recorded this interview in her apartment, which is the first time we did.
Yeah, that's your first time meeting her.
First time meeting her, but also the first time we've done one of these shows in someone's home.
That's true.
So it was a very unusual experience, especially because she lives in one of, obviously, an amazing apartment in New York City, but one of those apartments that overlooks Central Park. And you know, I've always walked by those buildings and wondered who must live there. But I've never been inside one of those apartments, one of those insanely fancy apartments.
And the funny thing about Fran's apartment is that it had also, the previous residents had all been themselves famous Jewish women.
Like iconic Jewish
women. Iconic Jewish women.
Like Madeline Kahn, right?
Madeline Kahn, or was it Carol Kane?
Maybe Carolyn Kane.
Maybe both.
It was a great apartment, and she and her friends were there, and it was very inviting and warm. It felt very homey. Yeah. I'll tell you what wasn't warm and inviting and enjoyable. Her dog. She has a little Pomeranian.
Oh, that's Samson.
Samson, that you will hear in this interview because...
Oh, you're also lucky. You're going to get to hear.
He's a panter. And sure enough,
she couldn't explain why.
You'll hear him panting.
Yeah, it's really funny.
And she's like, just don't let him near you because he bites. And I was like, oh my God.
What's redeeming about this dog? But Fran is, as you'll hear, one of the warmest people, one of the nicest. I'm so grateful that she sat down because I want other people to know her. And hopefully you'll get to know her a little better after hearing this. Coming up right after this, my sweet friend, Fran Drescher.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do-do-do-do-shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, this ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
We might hear dog barking from the next...
Oh, that's part of the table setting.
Okay. So, you know, at some point we may have to bring him out, but he's a panter. He pants a lot, and it's hard you're trying to record. You know, he also nips a little. He fear bites under certain circumstances that we're realizing are pretty consistent.
So he wouldn't bite you.
He knows. Has been me.
But you're attracted to him. You still find him beautiful.
Well, first
you still
of all, I got him with my second ex-husband.
Now you have
two. You know, I got rid of the husband, but the dog that's just like him, I had to keep. What am I going to do with the dog? He didn't take the dog.
Did he want the? Does he miss the dog?
He doesn't.
He hasn't
expressed. He doesn't talk to me. Oh. I have nothing but gratitude.
Yes.
And
but now you're stuck with
no bad feelings.
Samson.
Yes.
Why Samson?
Because from the time he was a tiny puppy, he was stuck up for himself.
We had a dog, a family dog. We named Biggie Smalls because he was big on attitude and small on size. He was this tiny, similar thing. But a couple months into owning this Biggie Smalls dog, my mother called me one night. She said, I was just watching a show on VH1, Behind the Music, and did you name our dog after a gangster rapper? I had never heard that word pronounced with both R's, gangster rapper. So what kind of dog?
Oh, here,
hi.
Here I am.
So Samson is out and made a beeline for Fran.
Okay, sitting Mama's like a, here.
Oh, yeah, you can hear him panting.
Give me a little cup of water. Oh, can you
give
me?
You could call him, you should call him Moses. He's been like walking in the desert.
Or is that my own? No, he don't want lemon water.
No, he doesn't need water. Right.
I think he may need water, but this is my morning lemon water.
Oh, yeah. So this is part of your routine. You have a very strict organic
dietary. Well, this I picked up on two dudes that I dated. One was Indian. That was the second husband. And the other one is Jamaican. And they both, you know, drank lemon water every day. And they said that is the way to live a long and healthy life. Lemon water every morning. First thing, I thought, maybe this is the universe giving me a message through these two dudes.
Something to take away.
I live by omens, you know. Il segno, they say in Italian.
What does that mean?
The sign.
Oh, okay. So signs are very important to you.
Yes.
So that's why you've kept Samson, and you're very good to Samson, probably because maybe that was something that your ex gave you.
I was always into animals than kids, but as I get older, you know, I do like the innocence of them. They're so freaking sweet.
And playful.
Everything. But I have always liked having kids at, like funerals and shiva houses.
Why?
Because they add an energy of life.
Yeah, that's true.
And you start talking to them and it's like, it's just a reminder that there's a continuum.
Yeah. Here. I mean, this is maybe too heavy, but does that make you sad that you don't, because you did not have kids? Do you have an awareness of
Sometimes
that?
Sometimes I think, and this is honestly only recently, should I have adopted a kid or should I have had a kid, or is it too late to have a kid? And I kind of feel like maybe it is too late. Did I miss a very key experience? Because I'm all about, you know, having the experience.
Yes.
And it's a ride.
Sure.
And I'm like, am I missing the big experience? You know, I mean, it could ruin your life, too, just as fast.
I think we just determined
I know, I've talked myself in and out of it in 2 minutes. This is where I go every time.
There are certain kids that you're around, and I think my nephew is one of them, where it makes you want to have, you know, they're so, like, lovely. It's something I've thought about. I've turned 40, and, I'm not in a relationship, so I see all of my friends, the people that I am close to in age, they're having kids, and they're experiencing that, and of course, I see it all filtered through, like, social media for the most part, which is only the good stuff.
That's why you can't, I mean, when I look at pictures of me with my ex-husband and videos where we're laughing hysterically and everything, I mean, it's everything you kept for a reason.
Is that hard is that hard for you to not miss him, those times?
No, because look, we had 3 years together. The first year was bliss. And I thought, wow, this is so great that at my age, I should have this kind of unbelievable experience of love and excitement and wonder.
You're
and
flush.
A new real
groove.
Love.
You got your groove more than back.
Heaven on earth.
Yeah.
I had for year one.
Yeah.
And I have no regret. Second year, agony and ecstasy.
Wow. Okay. So starting with
third year, just agony. So it's okay because that first year was such a rush, such a high.
Yeah.
So incredible. Yeah. And then also the arc of the relationship, I learned so much about myself that I had to experience it. I'm all about, you know, this is a huge classroom for you.
Yeah.
And everything that comes at you is your opportunity on your journey of self-refinement. It's like a game board. If you're not going to learn from your life.
Well, that's the thing. This is so short. I mean, the time that we have, and that's something we should talk about. And like, you know better than anyone how precious this time is.
And I do. And, you know, I was a victim of violent crime in my 20s.
Yeah.
I learned when people in their 20s should not really be thinking about how ephemeral life is, how it can really change. End on a freaking dime. Yeah.
This happened in your 20s. It's something you've spoken about.
Yeah, the rape.
The rape. Yeah. Someone broke into your house.
Yeah, and he was on parole.
Oh, my God.
I know. How's that?
In California.
Yes.
And he had a friend with him. So there were two men. A brother. Oh, my God. And was he caught eventually?
Yes. Thank God. Yeah. I am one of those victims that had closure.
So you testified.
There were a lot of, break-ins and rapes in my small area community in the Valley. You know, and I have like a photographic memory. I decided that I needed to study the details of this person's face. And it was at a certain angle. I was working with the police artist.
Sketch art, yeah.
You know, he wanted to do a flat face. And I said, can you do it at the angle that I'm seeing it in my head?
Yeah.
And he said, sure. And he drew it. And that night of the stakeout, they see a white car running, parked, double parked. Somebody gets into the passenger's side and they start pulling away. And just before they're about to get on the freeway, they pull him over. Hmm. That was the night he raped his last victim and her jewelry was hanging out of his pocket.
Oh my
the
God.
Detective had the police sketch that I did with him.
Wow.
And the detective said, this is you, you motherfucker. You're under arrest. It was like he had sat and posed for it.
No kidding. I always wonder how accurate those are.
Well, I made a point of look because the detective on TV said you must look for very specific, unique characteristics.
Well, something that awful and traumatic is happening, which I can't even relate to. You had the presence of mind to study this.
Ironically, I was the only one that wasn't gagged.
Oh my God.
But our friend Judy was there and she was also raped. And my first husband was there and he was completely tied up.
And how long did they, how much time did they,
The rapist, who was on parole, of course, got like 125 years.
Oh, good.
So he's never got no parole.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because there were so many, things.
Did you speak with other victims of his that you know, they must have been so appreciative.
There were three busloads of victims that were called down to pick him out of a witness line. But school buses.
What?
He said I was on a rampage.
So what happens afterwards, after something
after
like that?
After I wasn't completing my sentences, and though I didn't realize that, it was pointed out to me by some department in the city that speaks to rape victims and determines what I don't know what we're, maybe that you need therapy or something, but I would
special.
Start talking, and then I would kind of like drift off. And stop talking. And I did not even realize because I would go into my mindset thinking about what happened.
Yeah, my God.
This is why I remember it so vividly because you almost think that you're okay.
Yeah.
And then I'm in a restaurant and the, I guess, busboy or server dropped a tray that made a huge noise. Uh-huh. Without even thinking about it, leaped to my feet and screamed in this restaurant. So everyone was looking at me. And I kind of slinked back into my chair.
And are you aware in that moment, like, oh, it's because of this? I mean, how often would things like that happen before you were like, I got to start talking to somebody about this?
Somebody. Yeah. Well, you know, I got a movie shortly after that. And at that point, you know, we kind of needed the work. because this whole thing set us back. And
who's we? Oh, you and your husband.
Me and my husband. Yeah. And we lost so much things.
Oh, my God. All so you didn't have insurance? Stuff.
We had some insurance, but...
But are you thinking, wow, fuck that stuff. I mean, I'm alive. I mean, is any part of you that is going through this sense of euphoria even? I mean, I know you've been through this horrific thing, but there's also a sense that you did not die. I mean, the worst didn't happen.
You keep getting locked into the horror of the moment when the front door was broken down and they started charging into the house.
Oh my God.
Waving guns. And then the therapist tells you, do not get locked into that moment of horror. You have to walk your mind through the experience. Oh. And they left and you lived.
Uh-huh.
And the detective said, if you live through something like that, you did everything right.
Huh.
Don't beat yourself up, because I pulled a knife out of the knife rack before they came to me. And then I thought, no, I shouldn't put it back. And I did. And so I think I was beating myself up about that I shouldn't have.
The regret.
I should have just done it. That, you know, but I got scared.
Of course. I mean, I think about what if something like that happened to me? And I think, I would like to think that I would do that, grab a knife.
Right.
But then the reality of actually doing it, plunging a knife into a human being.
I saw they had guns. And at the time, especially, I was completely unconscious to this, but I had a superwoman, you know, like issue. I mean, I was everybody's superwoman and everybody's caregiver.
Yeah.
So, you know, I felt like I had failed.
Why was this? Can you track why that was? I mean, was it the way you were
grew up?
And
Well, yes. In my home.
This is in Queens in the
60s. In my home, me and my sister are like a year apart. And she was, I think, the high-strung one in the family. Took up a lot of room.
Yeah.
My mom was the nervous one, and my dad was the stoic one.
Huh.
And I was the youngest. Where I got my positive reinforcement was to be the needless one and be the caregiver. Yeah. Not have needs of my own, but take care of everyone else's needs.
I have a very similar familial dynamic. I think that's,
one
of many reasons why we get along. But do you still have that dynamic? Because your parents are still alive and as is your sister. So do you still have?
Not as much because I myself have changed.
Yeah, yeah.
I've really done a lot of work on myself. And I think actually that was a silver lining of getting cancer. I think the cancer was part and parcel of not really dealing with the rape and poetically ended up a gynecologic cancer.
Oh, you think? What, just it manifested itself because of how that trauma
lived
in your body?
I didn't really deal with it. I did the movie, and I just kind of brushed it under the carpet.
Wow.
And
now you have cancer, so it has to be about you. So now
that was my license to make it about me. As pathetic as that sounds, I had to get cancer to say, you know, I need help. I can't do this alone. You know, the universe keeps giving you these signs and these messages.
Yeah.
They start out nice and subtle, soft-spoken.
And then two guys come running through your door.
I know. And then eventually, if you have to get hit over the head with a hammer to wake up and freaking get the lesson that your soul needs to figure out on this, you know, leg of your journey.
Yeah. What do you think that message was now in hindsight? I mean, what was the message that you failed to?
I always needed to become a more well-rounded person and become vulnerable. And I didn't do that. Do, 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 do,
shaboom. As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over. Because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
I did not know this when we first started. I didn't know you created
The Nanny. Yeah, that started right here.
Yeah.
I called Peter. I said, I think I have the idea.
Peter was your husband.
Yeah. Now my gay ex-husband.
Yes. He was at the time your straight current husband.
Exactly.
And this is someone you met in high school.
Right. We were 15.
15.
We remember the exact moment that we saw each other. He was the pianist for the drama club.
Okay.
And I was in the play, but that wasn't even the first time we saw each other. It was in the hall, in the stairwell, and he was coming down the steps and I was going up and we laid eyes on each other. And he still, you know, I mean, he didn't want the divorce.
Really?
Yeah, he did not want it. He didn't want to break up our marriage. And so the minute, you know, he was free to explore his true orientation, he ultimately became, I think, a happier person.
Oh, I'm sure. Do you ever look back at that and replay certain moments and think, oh, God, I should have known then?
Absolutely. People are always saying, how did you not know? Let me just put it in the context that men were starting to take care of themselves differently.
Yes,
all
that's
that
true.
Stuff emerged from the metrosexual genre.
Yeah.
And when we were coming up, Saturday Night Fever. That was my first job.
Sure.
And in that movie, John Travolta's blow drying his hair.
That's right.
The pants were very tight. So
were starting to take care of their coif, their hair.
I was a teenager when I got that part, but that was the beginning of that whole period.
Well, what was it like meeting Travolta? You must have been.
He was a sweat hog at the time on Welcome Back, Kotter.
Oh yeah, a sweat hog. Yeah. Yeah.
And
he was a huge star.
He was a huge TV star.
Yeah.
This was his first movie. And I loved him from the TV show.
Yeah.
He was so funny on that show and cute.
Yeah, great timing.
Funny and cute. And that whole, it goes to show you what timing is, because that whole kind of New York thing was very popular. So I was right at the right place at the right time.
Totally.
Because I was never nervous when I take meetings.
Really?
So I would be very chatty, very confident, very comfortable in my own skin, pretty.
Yeah.
Very young. And so I started to book.
Yeah. And I wonder why you weren't nervous. Did you perform in high school? How did that?
I did perform in high school, but the dressers are very outgoing people. You know?
Yeah. Well, you say you got your, I love this story. You got your laugh from your mom. And will you tell me this story?
Well,
you told me about
the whole voice, you know, my parents are like satellite celebrities.
Yeah.
And even Rosie O'Donnell had them on as early bird restaurant critics.
Yes, they reviewed restaurants in Florida.
And they were on The Nanny quite a lot, too.
Yeah.
So,
and their names are perfect. Morton and Sylvia.
And Sylvia. So they, they were asked once, did you realize that Fran had a funny voice when she was growing up? And my mom, in the same voice, said, we never knew she had a funny voice.
I like that your laugh when you really, there are a couple different versions of it, but my favorite one is when you ramp up into it. It's like a long jumper running up to his mark. And then it goes.
And now people say to me, what do you want on your tombstone? And I say, her laugh made us laugh. That would be cool.
It's true. And what a gift. Before Saturday Night Fever, you were Miss New Yorker.
Miss New York Teenager, but I got an agent telling everybody I was Miss New York Teenager. I was Miss New York Teenager, first runner up.
Yes. Now, who beat you?
Oh, some blue-eyed blonde. Who's been my nemesis ever since? Yeah, exactly. Even back then, that was, that is the ideal for beauty.
Is that something that, I mean, you must have fought against that or fought that battle throughout your career? Was that ever always like Meg Ryan?
Not really, because I very quickly found my niche.
Yes, yeah.
I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
With a funny voice.
Yeah.
Who's good at physical comedy. So,
it really helps, right, to know that yourself.
What box you're in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it just happened that way. And that's, circling back to all those things that were out there and Travolta and all those people. And I just fit right into that. So I was put into that box, which was fine because I started working a lot.
A lot. And you were very outgoing. And did Travolta, was he flirty with you?
No, actually, he was with that older woman who was on, I think, Eight is Enough, it was called, or something.
Oh, yeah.
And she was very ill when he was doing that movie.
Oh,
she got cancer very young. They had to replace her on that show.
Oh, my God. That's
she
right.
died.
Oh, man.
And while he was shooting that movie, he was very distracted, actually.
Oh, wow.
I felt bad for him, because when he wasn't working, he would clearly be very distracted and seem very tired and sad and depressed.
Well, sorry I brought it up.
No, it's okay. Listen, these are little behind the scenes things
that
people don't know about.
When
one time I was on a red carpet, I guess it was the Golden Globes because there were movie stars and TV stars there. And he was kind of right next to me on the red carpet. So I decided to walk into his interview and say, are you as good in bed as you are on the dance floor?
That was your line in the movie. Yeah.
And his wife's jaw dropped. She thought I'm freaking coming on to her husband.
Well, in her defense.
But he knew. He knew.
She had she not. And then,
I'm just so proud of all your success.
Because so will.
When we talk about Saturday Night Fever, I had a small part, but because I became so famous subsequent to that, I'm always kind of included in the Saturday Night Fever, whatever.
He may not have even remembered you, because
had
it was such
I
a,
not had, become famous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe not. But also, they always show his solo dance. And I'm standing. He spins me off.
This is the colorful floor when he's
got
the white suit.
Not the white suit.
Uh-oh.
No, he's wearing a gray-blue shirt.
Okay.
And he spins me out onto the dance floor, and I'm not supposed to be such a great dancer.
Oh, was that? Are you a great dancer?
I'm a pretty good dancer, but
did you have to pretend?
You don't have to know how to dance to dance with Travolta.
Yeah.
He is the best freaking leader on the dance floor I have ever experienced. He is one hell of a dancer. I say to him, so am I, are you as good in bed as you are on the dance floor? And he says, if you're as good in bed as you are on the dance floor, you must be one lousy fuck.
That's the line.
And I said, well, how come they always send me flowers the next day? And he says, I don't know, maybe they thought you was dead. And he spins me off. I'm done with this.
Wait, was that in the script? That was in the script, but
I guess so.
Yeah.
And he spins me off in defiance because I am me.
Yeah.
I don't walk away. I stand there.
That led to an incredible career, and then it led at one point to Spinal Tap. What was that? Was that just pure improv doing, audition?
Yes.
You audition
well,
or
no,
they?
No, it's just talking.
They saw you in something.
When my agent called and said that there's a really interesting low-budget film with excellent comic talent. And Rob Reiner, it's his first film directorial debut.
But you knew him as an actor.
I knew him as an actor, and he had directed a couple of episodes on TV.
Okay.
But that was really it.
Yeah.
We had 27 pages of outline. Every scene had a few bits of information that you must include in your improv to keep pushing the plot forward.
Yeah. But not lines. Just
no,
like,
not lines. Yeah. I knew what that album cover was going to look like. Mm-hmm. That was a problem. You know, the girl on all fours with sniffing the gloves.
Yeah.
I knew that I had to say that. The fact that I said, you know, what was the white album? There was nothing on that freaking album.
Yeah.
That was on me.
Uh-huh.
Money Talks, Bullshit Walks, that was on me.
We've been talking in the last couple of days because Fran and I did a movie called Safe Spaces, which deals with safe spaces on college campuses and the sensitivity that people have because they get triggered by certain things. And we were just talking about sex scenes with the actresses and all these changes now. So we've been having to talk about that. Fran and I did press for it the other day. Is it difficult for you to talk about? For me, it's such a sensitive thing that I'm so afraid of like potentially saying the wrong thing that might get taken out of context. And was that something that you were worried about? Or was I the only one?
Oh, you mean what I was saying in terms of answering it?
Yeah, like even that, even to say to a woman that you're doing a, say that, I'm correcting myself, say to a woman that you're doing a sex scene with, you know, to talk about what the boundaries are now, what the parameters are now.
Look, you know, the thing is...
And you said something at the time. You said, look, and you mentioned having been a victim of a violent crime. That's not domestic violence.
No.
So you know the most extreme version of that, of an aggression against a woman. And you had said, you know, and of course, there's a huge gray area.
Right. Well, there's a big spectrum.
Yeah.
From, you know, not being fully aware and needing to learn and being accepting of that, you know, because life is about learning and owning your bads.
Yeah.
Even if unintentional. But all you can do is own it.
Yeah.
And then it's up to the other person if they want to believe you
and or the public.
Open your heart, open their heart and be forgiving.
Yeah.
You know, owning your bad and apologizing with sincerity. Authentic sincerity is one side of the coin. Then opening your heart and being forgiving is another side of the coin. And, you know, we all do our best.
Did you ever think you'd see a day in this business where there'd be this kind of reckoning, this like necessary reckoning? But did you anticipate this in any way?
Well, I always knew that, you know, like I grew up in the burgeoning times of women's lib.
Yeah.
Burning bras. I was young, but I was observing. I wasn't out there burning my bra. I was still a kid. Uh-huh. But I saw it. I experienced it secondhand. And I knew what was happening. And I also knew when the Equal Rights Amendment didn't get passed, I knew what that meant. I know what, you know, why Roe versus Wade is an issue of contention in this country. And I can hear, you know, both sides of it. And
is that why you used your platform in 2008 to support Hillary Clinton? And I think, again, when she ran for president, right, during her Senate run.
I definitely, was a surrogate speaker for her the first time.
Yeah.
She ran.
And was that the first time that you really got active in, I mean, used your
profile? No, I had known her in Washington because I actually am a, you know, successful lobbyist in Washington and passed a law by unanimous consent, which means all 100 senators said yes, Fran.
No kidding.
I was written up twice in the Congressional Record.
What was the law?
The Gynecologic Cancer Education and Awareness Act, the first of its kind in U.S. history. And wow. I'm a gynecologic cancer survivor, so I kind of jumped on a bill that was about to die.
Wow.
And
you brought awareness.
And breathed life into it. And
why would a bill like that die?
Because you need to have person that it gets in your face in just the right way. And even Hillary said, you know, she has a lot of people when she was a senator that would come to her office, a lot of women, to talk about women's health issues. Hmm. Being a celebrity is very useful in Washington because they all want a photo op with you.
Yeah.
So you'll get that meeting.
Yeah.
And
now there is a celebrity in and that's how into celebrity.
We're watching the biggest reality show.
That to me is something that, like, it's funny to be, and I'm not going to say where we are, but in this part of New York, because I associate it with Trump. I lived so long thinking of Trump in a certain way. He was kind
Trump
of like
was on like the nanny.
Get out of here.
Yes, because at
he
the time
being on TV. He
was kind of Mr. New York.
Yeah.
Everyone knew him.
Yeah,
there were a lot of people that were more highly regarded as real estate tycoons in New York City within the real estate world. Oh. But in terms of, you know, the nation and public persona.
Totally.
He was the one that we cast.
Yeah.
To play himself.
Sure.
And I stood between him and Mr. Sheffield, and my line was, all you millionaires are alike. And we got a note, PETA got a note that said...
had to be billionaire.
Mr. Trump is not a millionaire. He's a billionaire.
Get out of here. Get out
Peter
of here.
Intuitively framed it. And I said, I'm not going to put billionaire because that seems too on the money. Would the Don, as people were calling him back then, the Donald.
Yes, that's right.
Would it be cool with zillionaires? Because that sounded more like Fran to me.
Yeah.
You know, it sounded more like Queens.
Yeah.
I don't think I would say billionaire, but I think I'd say zillionaire.
Yeah. And he probably...
He was fine with that.
I bet.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled babbel.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply. If you run an e-commerce business, you know the amount of work it takes to produce something great.
So if you want to optimize your workflow and reduce costs, ShipStation is the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates wherever you sell online.
ShipStation's simple dashboard makes managing orders, smooth label printing, reporting, and customer service unbelievably easy.
With shipping configurations automatically applied, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online.
Plus, save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off UPS, DHL Express, and USPS rates. Over 130,000 companies have grown their e-commerce businesses with ShipStation.
ShipStation is the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth.
Go to ShipStation.com and use code LONG to sign up for your free 60-day trial.
That's ShipStation.com, code LONG.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
And now you're on The Nanny, which you're in everyone's home. And this is around the time when there were just a few network, you know, just a few channels. And I'm curious how that changed life for you.
It was a 180.
Really?
Because, yeah. You know, first of all, the show is wildly successful, yeah, all over the world and continues to be watched to this day. I've never been off the air for 25 years,
God,
anywhere in the world.
God.
The Bushmen in South Africa, in Botswana, knew who I was.
Get out of here.
Homeless people know who I am. You're that nanny.
Oh, my God.
So, and then I go to countries like, you know, France and hang out in Paris, and other people have their thoughts on what Americans are treated like.
You
there,
see au pair.
They love me. Oh, Le Nounou Don't Faire.
Oh, my God.
That's the name of the show there, and it was a huge hit, and it's still on.
And God forbid you laugh at something.
And oh, I know. Like, that's
there she is.
Peter would say to me, you know, we're late for a plane, and he'd say, you know, just don't speak. Yeah. And we were going up an escalator, and all I said was, uh-huh. And that was
I think you have a lovely voice, and people, when they imitate it, myself included, do like sort of a grating thing, and it's not. It's
you know, it's funny that you say that, because one time it kind of hit me that I really have a funny voice, and then I was like freaked out and wondering why I ever get dudes, but I do, and people come up to me all the time and say, you know, oh, it's so good to hear your voice, and I think, well, thank God the spell isn't broken.
Uh-huh. When did it occur to you? What do you mean? There was a moment it occurred to you?
Yeah, because there was a time many years ago where I went into the crouton business. I was baking them and selling them at supermarkets. And I sold a supermarket. And when I went back, the manager said, oh, I know you. You're the lady who sells croutons with the funny voice.
Oh.
Not the actress, not the comedian. But when he said I was like the lady that sold croutons with the funny voice, I'm thinking, oh my God, I really have a funny voice.
It's not just because I'm an actress.
No, it's not.
I know this about the croutons because the other day, we got that asked that by a journalist. Well, how do you take, is it in the movie that Franny and I did that you can see all over the country on IMAX? There's a scene where my character's constantly buying bagels and eating bagels. And she asked us what our bagel order was, what our favorite bagel was.
Oh, right, right.
Yours was
organic. Has to be organic.
And what type of bagel?
And an everything bagel, hollowed out. And well toasted.
And I laughed and I said, well, what do you do with the hollowed out part?
And I said, and you make croutons. Hello.
That is exactly what you said. And you do have a good memory.
And I do.
Yeah, you said hello after. With The Nanny's ending, you find out you have cancer. Do you remember how? Obviously.
Well, it took me 2 years and 8 doctors to get a proper diagnosis of uterine cancers. I got in the stirrups more times than Django. And so, you know, the doctor number 8, who was so convinced I had like 5 minutes of fertility left, was convincing me and my boyfriend, 16 years my junior, to...
Well, this is after Peter.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we were already separated when I started to get symptoms.
Okay.
And then I had a boyfriend and...
He was 16 years your junior.
He was. Right. He was. And he, interestingly enough, was the person that got me through my battle. My destiny and his destiny were in synergy with each other, because when he was in college, he had a girlfriend whose sister was murdered. She had a reaction to it that included pushing him away.
Yeah.
Eventually, he let her go.
Yeah.
It was what he thought she wanted.
Yeah.
Afterwards, and for years, he thought to himself, if I'm ever with another woman and she's going through a crisis, I'm not going to let her push me away. I'm going to be there for her every step of the way.
Hmm.
That recipient was me.
Did you try to push him away?
No. In fact, he you know, quit his job. He moved in with me.
Oh, my God.
And nobody has a bad word to say about him. And I write about him in my book, Cancer Schmancer. And he thought of the title of the book.
Oh, really? How did you meet him?
He worked for me.
He was transcribing notes for your book. Well, hey, listen, he's around.
Well, you meet in the workplace.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You know?
When you find out it is that, and is there a part of you that's relieved to at least know? Or is it just like, holy fuck,
no,
I have cancer?
I thought I was a goner.
Yeah.
The test that she gave me that diagnosed me with cancer, the endometrial biopsy, doctor number one said I was too young for.
Wow.
And I didn't say, well, what would that prove or disprove? I was just glad to be too young for anything. So, but actually that was the test that proved that I had cancer. And 3 days later, she calls me and says, you know, you have adenocarcinoma. And I said, what's that? And she said, uterine cancer. And I literally dropped to my knees.
I bet. Oh, my
and
God.
And wept. And then I had to call my parents, which I'm, again, you know, I'm not about.
Because you don't want to put that
on
them.
Right, putting stress on them.
That's a real acting
job. Protecting them.
Because you said your mother is also very high strung, like
she's
your sister.
Nervous.
Nervous. So,
she's a frightened person.
Yeah, yeah.
But much to my, she picked up the phone. She said, okay, well, let's not panic. What did the doctor say? You know, again, I wasn't like into having them sacrifice the vacation. They were supposed to go on with my sister.
Right.
And I wasn't ready to make it about me. I had to still learn.
At this point, do you feel like you're doomed? Are you hopeful?
Yeah, I remember going into my bathroom and I had just bought a mascara. It was still in the box.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, that thing's going to be here, and I won't.
I think that's sometimes about objects, you know, because I'm a bit of a hoarder, and I think this stupid thing that I've chosen to hold on to is going to outlive me.
Are you afraid of death?
Very much, yeah. Yeah, I'm afraid of not existing. We were talking about this last night. I said something like, I was stoned. Existence is so great.
Do you have a fear of being alone?
I'm able to be alone and happy alone, but I only for periods, brief periods.
Brief periods?
Yeah, a couple days. I can do a couple days. And then I start climbing the walls and I need being alone in that sense, in being completely disconnected from anybody else.
Your stuff.
Yeah, yeah. How did your fear manifest?
You know, you got to get religious.
You got to get religious. Well, you faced it. You had enough time to really formulate what you thought was going to happen or what you feared was going to happen. What did that look like?
When you don't have the distractions of the day, at night
exactly.
is when your imagination starts to wander
totally.
And get the better of you. And I always tell people, you know, if you don't have a pet, get one. I mean, if you don't have a warm body in that bed with you to grab onto and bring you back into reality.
Do you still talk to that guy who helped you through that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. He recently got married.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we stayed together for about 2 years after that and then broke up. When I was vulnerable and fragile, everything was working well.
Yeah.
Once I started to get better, then my power began to reemerge.
Yeah, and he didn't.
And, you know, I started writing the book.
Is that when you got into Buddhism too?
The Buddhism came, you know, several years later.
What is your most commonly used emoji? Do you use emojis when you're texting?
Yes.
What's your go-to?
Well, I definitely always have an okay, a thumbs up, a praying hands,
okay,
clapping hands, and... the face that has a wink and a kiss.
Oh yeah.
Lips.
Oh,
heart.
Lips. Huh.
An airplane. So sometimes
flying,
you know,
you're
I like to see if I can write in hieroglyphics.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna put, you know, like I put the praying hands, the plane, and then a thumbs up.
You're going to be fine. You're safe
I
travels.
I pray that you're going to have safe travels. Oh, it's going to be okay.
That's good.
So I try and,
And also you use your hands a lot.
And I swear to you, we're going to end up going back to that. It is hieroglyphics,
it is.
You know.
Yeah.
They're all, you know, we're very slowly being manipulated.
Well, people are now
into
saying
a universal language.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah. LOL.
Right.
Yeah. I'm winking at that.
those are my favorite, but then I do some food things sometimes.
Oh yeah, it's specific food things.
Yeah.
If you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play and why?
I think that it would be tennis.
Uh-huh.
I like tennis because you're really in competition with yourself.
Huh, yeah.
When you play tennis. It's just, how much better you're going to keep trying to be.
You said something interesting the other day that we were talking about sports and you said, I don't follow sports unless I'm dating somebody who is into the sport.
And then I become obsessed with their sport.
Isn't that?
I'm a very good girlfriend in that regard. You know, the guy that got me through the cancer was from Massachusetts. So he got me hooked on the Patriots.
Sure.
In the year that was 9/11.
Oh.
And the nation needed the Patriots
and they won
to
that year.
Win. They did indeed.
Yeah.
And it was also a very compelling story because Tom Brady was the rookie that had to step in.
That's right. A late round draft.
$10 million man, I think he was called.
Yeah, Drew Bledsoe. It was Drew Bledsoe, yeah.
Listen, how come, do you ever consider doing TV?
I'd love to.
Really?
Yeah. I occasionally do.
Gwyneth Paltrow recently said at one of the awards things that she was on, film people can get into any restaurant and television people own them.
Oh, that's funny. Did you laugh like that when she said it?
I actually wasn't watching, but somebody told it to me and I thought, that's so clever.
Just one more question for you.
Okay.
If you could be a Muppet, any Muppet, which Muppet do you identify with? And were you on The Muppets?
Yes.
Oh, great. Amazing. Oh, you're so lucky.
I was a nanny.
Oh, yeah? Oh, really?
Yeah,
before
I took
the nanny.
An interview. No.
Oh, when you were on the nanny? Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah. One of the, I guess, lesser couples, I didn't know, but they had a baby Muppet.
Okay. Oh, one of the lesser Muppet couples?
And I was interviewed and got the job.
Oh, that's funny. Not Statler and Waldorf, the old men in the...
No.
I don't think they were overtly a homosexual couple.
No. And then I did a John Landis video with Kermit and Miss Piggy.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
So I'm down with the Muppets.
Well, I'm down with you.
Thank you. Ditto.
You're the best. Thank you. You didn't have to do this. And thanks, Fran.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me in your beautiful
I'm glad
home.
It worked out.
Me too.
Peace. Be well.
Oh my God, so that happened.
Your impression of her makes her voice sound so much more appealing.
I know, my God.
It's actually, once you get to know her.
I gotta say, after meeting her, my opinion of her voice and her laugh specifically changed so radically.
Oh, interesting.
To be honest with you, like I said earlier, I found it irritating. But now, having heard her and heard her story and met her and experienced how warm she is, I kind of like it.
Yeah, it really suits her. And it's not, I think part of the fact that I was, I think, somewhat turned off by it as well, you know, both lived in LA, and to the point where I think that may have contributed to me not really getting into the show, which I now want to go back and watch.
You auditioned for the nanny?
No, watching the show. Yeah, to play the nanny. My voice was too normal. There was also something about it that felt forced, or I thought it was like an affect, like she was forcing something.
Yeah, oh my God, that story is so funny when she talks about her mom.
Her parents, I know, isn't
that
great?
I was like, what? I don't think she has an interesting
voice. I know, we never knew.
That's so funny.
But it's true, it's natural, it's her.
I found it so funny that you couldn't stop mimicking, like aping her laugh as she...
It's so infectious.
I know. And then you would laugh at her laugh, and her laugh would... Yes. Kind of would crescendo above your laugh. So there are moments in that interview where you had like competing laughs.
Yeah.
And you're like,
yeah. It's so hard not to laugh when she, it's because her, it's funny. It's also just a funny sound.
Yeah.
And you're right. She is so, and it's such, again, it's a natural laugh. It's not, she's one of the, we've talked about this a few times, people who laugh with abandon. You know, how infectious that is, how joyous that is.
And she was drinking lemon water, and I thought, I had a moment where I thought, she could be eating cat food, and I would think to myself, maybe I should start eating cat food. Because she looks so good for her age. And not like,
oh my God.
And not like, you know, how a lot of quote-unquote well-preserved older people look, where they've had a lot of weird stuff put into their skin.
It's like, oh, so-and-so got a new face.
Yeah. 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 And we all know who those people are.
Yeah.
But she
maybe
is,
they'll be guests on the show one day, hopefully.
But she looks so naturally good still.
Yeah.
So for her age. God. It's amazing. So I thought, I got to start drinking lemon water.
I did it for a little while. I drank lemon water in the morning.
Well, if there's one takeaway from this interview is that
drink lemon water.
People should drink lemon water.
Yeah.
She looks fantastic.
Hopefully they don't screw up what you just said and start eating cat food. but you're right. She looks good.
I love her philosophy about life and learning and the world being a classroom. And that's what life should be, is that everyone should, you know, learn and work on themselves. And obviously she has done tons of work on herself.
But she doesn't seem like weighted down by some of these really awful things she's been through, some of these trials and tribulations that she's
I mean, that rape story is the most violent, horrific.
Yeah.
It just, I can't believe anyone could survive something like that and then work through it to the point where they're functioning
and be,
let alone
be
positive and cool and easy and
so well adjusted.
That alone is so remarkable, and inspirational. That I really hope that people heard that and
found comfort in it, because it's happened. I mean, I know we both know people close to us that it's happened to, and I do hope that there can be comfort taken in the fact that she overcame it in such a complete way, to the point where, like you said, she is now just such a well-adjusted. I mean, I think it took a long time.
And I'm sure there's part of her that's still working on it. Yeah. I'm sure you never fully get over something like that. Yeah. I don't know how you can, but she talked about the universe giving her signs, and the cancer was the thing she almost, in a weird way, almost needed to address certain things that she hadn't addressed in her life. And it forced her. I thought that was really interesting when she was talking about her family and how she played the role of the caretaker growing up. And she was never able to be kind of selfish and work on herself. And I thought that was interesting too, that our family dynamic just happens to be somewhat similar to hers, in that she said her mother worried a lot and her father was stoic. And
we have a very similar.
Yeah. And she was the caretaker in a sort of similar way that you are, I would say, in our family.
Yeah. I wonder if that's one of the reasons.
That commonality probably makes you feel closer to her.
I mean, I do. Especially now having done this, I just really like her so much. Like,
I do too.
She's 60-year-old goals.
Oh my God. I love her tombstone, her epitaph.
Oh yeah.
Her laugh made us laugh. Yeah. I think that's
almost made me cry.
Couldn't be more perfect.
And it's true. And what a gift that is to be able to give people.
At one point you do a quick John Travolta impression, and
I abandoned it.
Well, it just wasn't good.
It wasn't good.
I mean, it was too, like, too Fonzie or something.
Yeah, you know what it is? It's a ripoff of Dana Carvey doing it. Dana Carvey used to do a...
Wait, try again. I bet you could do a better one.
It's like, oh my God. Oh, it's like... Oh.
Isn't it like...
But this is like, you know, back in the day. He sounds much different now. It's the same way Christopher Walken sounds different now. Walken, if you go back and watch like Deer Hunter,
he wasn't crazy
and all over the place.
What is that? That's weird.
But yeah, the Travolta wasn't good. And also, I'm sure you picked up on this. I made a comment about Travolta flirting with her on the movie. Mm. And right away she went into like, no, not only did he not flirt with me, but he was like, his girlfriend at the time was like on the verge of dying.
You sort of stepped in it. You didn't know.
What kind of gossipy, douchey question is that?
I love that she went to the crouton business, that she said it so casually.
You missed
I went to the crouton business. I didn't know there was a crouton business. I mean, it makes sense that there is, but I would have assumed the crouton business is like connected with the bakery, you know, baking business.
I know that there's
a separate business for croutons.
I know. It's like saying I went into the sprinkles business. I should have been more prepared for that. I found it so funny when she said it.
I like that she's down with the Muppets, but she didn't pick her favorite Muppet, which I was really expecting Miss Piggy.
Yeah, me too.
She seems like she'd be a big Miss Piggy fan.
But anyway, I could have talked to her. You know, we actually spoke for a long time, and there's a lot of it that got cut out. So at the end of it, she said, because we had been talking for so long, she said, I was like, oh my God, it's going to be such a challenge to cut stuff out of this because it's all so good. And she said, without missing a beat, she goes, well, why don't you just have a two-parter?
And she's like, do you ever do two-part episode, double episode?
And then she immediately called herself out. She was like, I love that I'm like, you know, so arrogant to think that you would do that. It was so refreshing. And she like, she recognized it. Yeah, really fun. And hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you for listening. And we're going to post about it on Instagram. We're going to post about Fran's charity, Cancer Schmancer. But we do hope you... check that out as well. Check out the voice memo at the end of this episode if you want. Oh, and we'd love to continue to hear from you. You can actually email us now at lifeisshort@wondery.com. And we would love to hear your thoughts. And we would also love to hear how you make the most out of life. We want to hear from everybody and figure out this whole life thing.
If you want any advice from two middle-aged cis white men who have no degrees in psychology.
Or no business giving advice to anyone.
Please ask away.
Or if you have any stories that you want to share, you know, anything you want to share, we would love to hear from you. Again, that's lifeisshort@wondery.com.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Do-do-do-do-do-shaboom.
Thanks for listening to Life is Short. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a 5-star review. Obviously, be honest, but I don't want to tell you what to do, but it would really help the show out. Tell your friends to subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and every major listening app, as well as Wondery.com. Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long. It's produced by Christian Long and Megan Monaco. Senior producer is Michelle Mish Lands. Audio engineer is Marcelino Villalpando. Executive produced by Marshall Louie and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Do you ever do a two-part?
You haven't done it.
Look at me. It's like I cannot conceive of the fact that your audience would not want to hear the whole thing. I have such a healthy ego.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.